This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. Sudan is struggling to recover from a devastating 21-year civil war. A peace agreement last January ended the fighting between the Muslim-dominated north and the predominantly Christian south, but the region remains unstable. NPR's Charlene Hunter-Gault traveled to one of the poorest and most remote areas of southern Sudan. She accompanied six women from Boston who went to keep a promise they made 6 years before the war ended.
The welcoming party came running onto the dusty landing strip. Dozens of men, women, and children from the sprawling village of Akan that edges right up to the landing strip and rolls on for miles beyond in the sun-scorched earth. The word has spread that the women from America have come to keep their promise of building a school for Akan's girls. One of them is Sara Rial, a Sudanese exile returning to her home for the first time in 20 years. She'd opposed the Khartoum government as a student and fled in fear of her life. Alighting from the plane in Akan, she got down on her knees and kissed the ground.
I wasn't even thinking I was going to shed tears, but coming here, seeing all the sun and the people, I'm really happy. I'm really happy to be back home.
The spirits of Akan's girls are high, as are the other villagers, but it's clear from their tattered clothes and mostly shoeless feet, they're all dirt poor. Soon, the welcome songs give way to martial songs, sung when this rural village was once a stronghold of the SPLA, the Southern Guerrilla Forces fighting the Khartoum government. Today, the guerrillas are the government, at least in the south, separate from the north, but with representatives in a unity government in the northern capital, Khartoum. That arrangement will continue for the next 6 years, when the south will vote on whether to remain a part of a unified Sudan or break away into an autonomous region. The spirits in Akan are also high because this pastoral village of some 63,000 has produced the president of southern Sudan, Salva Kiir, as well as the first ever female commissioner, Achol Sira Rehan, whom the women from Boston met in Akan 6 years ago. For Rehan, the well-being of girls is the key to the well-being of the community, and it's she who extracted the promise from my sister's keeper. Rehan has traveled by car for hours on roads made nearly impassable by war and inattention. She finally reaches the village by crossing a river where a crocodile recently devoured a cow. At a brief ceremony, Gloria White Hammond, the leader of the delegation, is asked to say a few words.
As New Sudan rebuilds its country, through the girls' school, we'll raise up another generation of godly women leaders.
Although White Hammond has told the villagers they're here to build a school, this is really an assessment trip. The women want to build a school, they just don't know what it's going to take and if they have it. We're staying in a compound Rehan built as a women's center. There are several mud brick houses with cone-shaped grass roofs called tukuls, soon to become a part of a debate within the group about how they carry out their promise. Most of the American women are not strangers to this part of Sudan. They came first in 2001 as part of a delegation buying back women and children captured by Northerners and taken, they say, as slaves.
I am the great-great-great-great-granddaughter of slaves and people who came from Africa.
White Hammond is both an African Methodist Episcopal minister and a pediatrician.
And I come as a way of honoring my own ancestors who survived unconscionable abuse. Africa's a tremendous continent with incredible resources, which quite frankly, much of the rest of the world has robbed for generations. And it's our responsibility to build up what over the generations we tore down.
Melinda Weeks, a young lawyer attending Harvard Divinity School, traveled with White Hammond on the slave redemption mission.
So out of that is where MSK, my sister's keeper, the idea for it came in terms of talking with the women once they had been returned back home, needing to rebuild and very much wanting to establish their communities again.
My sister's keeper then bought grinding mills to help relieve the women of the burden of manually pounding sorghum, their staple grain. That delivery took a year. This is Ashley Laufer's first time in Sudan. She works now for a foundation and joined my sister's keeper after a hiatus from what she termed bad experiences working in development in Africa.
I lived with a number of missionaries who just treated the people they worked for and that they were supposed to be loving with disrespect. I saw a lot of money spent in ways that seemed to be taking away people's self-sufficiency rather than giving it to them.
Cynthia Hines-Bell has a master's in public health and is both the wife of a Baptist minister and a minister herself.
I have a passion and I feel led by the Holy Spirit to be a voice and to make a difference in this tragedy.
With the moon the only light in the yard, Rahan and some government officials traveling with her tell stories under a tree, giving life to the data in the fact books. That of the almost 1.5 million students in school in southern Sudan, only some 83,000, or 12%, are girls, the worst female-to-male ratio in the world. And while the post-war numbers are increasing in the early grades, economic hardship and forced marriages are leading to dramatic decreases before secondary school. Rahan adds her own story, dating back to her school days when she says an Arab soldier from the north wanted to take her by force. She was 16. She escaped to the areas controlled by the SPLA, but she faced the same problem from her own people.
The men were desperate around me. They wanted to murder me. And again, I fall into the same problem. I was married compulsive without my choice.
Rahan is convinced education will liberate women from such problems, which is why she's put her confidence in my sister's keeper.
Because they're coming to support education. And I'm seeing the way that we can actually promote women in the power and the rest of the thing is through education. And even to change some cultures that are not helping the community.
Dinner is prepared by a small army of local women inside a smoke-filled tukul. And as the group dines on chunks of the grilled cow donated by a villager, they hear a mixed chorus of wishes and dreams. Some in Rahan's party are arguing for a boarding school, others for a concrete day school building, while still others are saying you can't separate education from all the other crying needs of the village. No food, no hospitals, clinics, or medicine. Sara Rial, who is 7 months pregnant, looks exhausted.
Yeah, I'm really overwhelmed. I mean, the people are talking about things that are not available, no schools, no hospitals, medical supplies. There's so many things that need to be done.
As the women chew on the bits of beef, they have more to chew on than they'd imagined. The question that will haunt the six women from Boston, in their dreams in tents under the stars, is whether they can keep their promise of building a girls' school in a village war has driven back to the Stone Age. Charlene Hunter-Galt, NPR News.